Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Q&R. Today we have a full panel. We have all the pastors. We have Pastor Cam from Faith. We have Pastor Adam. He's back from Honduras. And we have Pastor Wayne.
So we're like, we have the bearded man, the world traveler, and
Wayne.
The Alabama fan.
Yes.
Football season's almost there.
It's so close. Just can't wait
to hear about it every single Sunday.
But yes, we are so glad that you are here, and we have Pastor Lou, and I remembered it. Pastor Lou is back, and he is here with us in the comment section, so please let him know that you're here. You can shoot questions if you want to, and he can maybe answer those, and if not, we can come back and answer those next week. But we are so glad that you are here, and today we had all three pastors that all three preached on Nehemiah this past week, and that sort of hasn't happened much this summer.
Right.
And so, to get us started, I'm going to ask you all to maybe recap a little bit about where you went with Nehemiah this past Sunday.
She's looking at you.
Yeah, you're in the end, so you get to go first. Last time I kept stopping you, remember?
Right.
I want to give you the freedom.
I thought you had gotten away far enough, but you didn't.
I started with the idea that I'm not a lot like Nehemiah, because he was obviously an effective leader. Stay away from those value adjectives, but he was an effective leader and obviously a strong personality. And so I guess the thing that I relate to him was this idea that he recognized what mattered to God and he did something about it. When he hears the news, he weeps, because I think he understands that God's heart is still broken, that even though the people have, some of them, have returned to Jerusalem in all the ways that matter, they are still in exile. And that's not what God wants. It's not what they want, but I think he understands that that's not what God wants either. And so he responds to that. And I talked about in chapter 3, where it talks about all the different people who had part in building the building project there, the goldsmith and the perfume maker and the priest and the guard and the soldiers and the rulers and the governors. It names all those people that all of them realized to some degree maybe that this mattered to God and it mattered to them. And so they had a chance to be part of it and were able to do that. And so that's kind of what I did with it was most of us kind of have an idea of the things that matter to God and that we can take up our sword or our trowel, whichever it is, and do what and be part of what God is doing in our world. And I talked a little bit about, you asked me to talk some more, how the story is really kind of a sad story, because when they built the first temple, you know, God's presence was so overwhelming when they finished it and dedicated it. But when they built the second temple, nothing really happens. They wept because they recognized this was not the glory of the first temple. When they finished the wall in Nehemiah, they weep again because they realize that they're still in exile, even though they have a city and they have a temple, that things are not what God intended them to be. And so what happens is they wait until Jesus comes, mm-hmm. and they have a king, and they have God's dwelling is with them. And so those promises start to come true. And so in Jesus, now we know what matters to God in a fuller sense. And so we're invited to be part of that. So that's kind of a, could have cut it short by 15 minutes.
You should have.
Kind of got all that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder the whole, you know, like first temple, second temple kind of thing. There's a bit of, I don't know, maturing's not the right word necessarily, but they've been through it in a way that's, you know, that is really important to how we understand the Old Testament in general. And we might be talking about Old Testament later, but that we kind of recognize that a good portion of the Old Testament was written down during these times, right? After they, you know, sort of like the Promised Land was this idea that, I mean, it was all going to work out, and then it didn't, right?
Right.
So then on the other side, is God still there?
Right.
And how do we make sense of all of our story? And so when I was in seminary, my Old Testament class, my first year, this is where the Old Testament professor began with Ezra and Nehemiah. And her point was, kind of understand this point in the history, and then you understand,
yeah.
you know,
what they wrote
what
about.
They, why they wrote what they did. And
right.
So, yeah.
Because
so
that's when a lot of that stuff came together, right? A lot of the, when they're writing down their stories, they're going to have the gloss of thinking we're still kind of waiting for the, all this stuff to come true.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Right. Looking for the fulfillment.
Yeah.
And a good portion of their identity, I think you said maybe said this at some point in one of our summers, a good portion of their identity is also formed during this time where they had to push against other groups from the outside, whether that be the big kind of big threat of the Babylonians or the Persians, but also, in, like in the Nehemiah story, just the people living around who, you know, kind of
close
more
proximity.
Of a threat that way. And so there's a tension in, I think, in the Nehemiah story where they build a wall to protect themselves. But this, we need to remember, because probably, I mean, just put this out there so like people want to get something new when they watch this. I think when, you know, people hear build a wall these days, there's a context for that, right? So one thing that I don't want to get into politics of that, but I think that, I mean, when I preach a sermon, I'm thinking, how are people going to think about this? And something I completely avoided in the sermon, but... You guys
did. I did too.
But I probably should have now. Everybody else
that's
is like,
what I was thinking.
I would just say
the Adam Short Show.
I would just say one thing, and one thing that I think is different about that is that we're talking about people who are powerless. Like everybody, you know, can be against them. They have very little going for them, and that's a very different context than the United States. And people can make parallels all they want, and that's fine too. But I think that what we see in that story is them trying to pull the pieces back together of, you know, of both the Ezra side with the temple, but then Nehemiah side with the wall, sort of the religious life, but also all of life. So my point, not that you asked.
Well, I was just gonna let y'all just start it on your own.
Yeah. So my point with the sermon was that they were rebuilding a life with God at the center. And whether that's rebuilding or building, you know, kind of, I think is in some ways we're all rebuilding, in one way or another. But the it's the same thing that's happening when we gather as community now. Or I had just been to Honduras. I was kind of, I got back at 1:30 in the morning and preached it 4 hours later. I was up getting ready to preach, and so it's the same work that Ashley and Justin are doing, building community with a life with God at the center for people in Honduras. And there's that is that element in the Nehemiah story where it isn't somebody has to kind of be the catalyst or the lightning rod. I think the church can do that. But in that, it's really important for it not to be about us or for us to take over or, you know, have control issues. And that's where I probably can be like Nehemiah because I'd like to take control and everybody do what I say. And that can have a good side, but it also can have a negative side. But it's the same work we do at the Foundry. It's the same work that we do in church. And there really isn't such a distinction between, we sometimes talk about inside the walls and outside the walls. At Broadway, you know, we kind of use that language, like what's happening here in, you know, on Sunday morning or on our kids zone or what happens when people come to church. There's not really that much of a distinction between that and what happens when we go outside. I mean, it's all the same thing. All of it is building life where God is at the center of our families or our own, you know, our own orientation and purpose and our communities. And a good portion of what we do, I think, is community, Christian community development. Not that it has to be, you know, we're about us. It's that we use the opportunities and the gifts and the resources that we have to see where God is at work and join Him for the sake of the whole. And I think that's that whole. Jerusalem represents that whole in the Nehemiah story. So one of the things that I read was that it was here when they built the wall where they were safe. And safety is like a big portion of this story, is when Jerusalem became holy ground. So then they could begin to, really wasn't the end, as you said, it was the beginning.
Right.
And, you know, Jesus will also weep over Jerusalem, you know, when he comes, right? So there's also, I think, this component of like the fulfillment of God's promises and yet the realizations that that things aren't as they could be. Is still going on today.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. During that wall building, he also realizes that the poor are being neglected or taken advantage
of.
Right. And that's one of the things they address. They also talk about how they're misusing the Sabbath and how they're their worship is not what it should be. And so right. those, it's not and just.
I thought that was cool because when they're working together towards a common purpose, that's not just their own little purpose, but their common right. purpose, they realize how much the poor have to offer yeah. in helping to build the
right.
build their point. Structure. Right. But also I think in when they're joining together, they realize the injustice that they were letting happen.
Right.
Because they weren't sharing anything together.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was something I talked about a little bit, was just how when we're united in a common mission or purpose or dream that God's given to us, you kind of become more aware of how vital each person
right.
is
yeah,
in,
yeah.
in the eyes
right,
of God
right, right.
and how everyone can contribute in ways that we usually can't really see.
Mm-hmm.
So I just mm-hmm. thought that was a cool part of the story where that comes out of working together.
Right.
You know, it's not like justice is just something that just happens yeah. randomly,
right.
but it happens as you're working towards something that everybody's working towards
yeah.
together.
Yeah. yeah.
It's kind of what's we were reading that book by Greg Boyle. He talks about it's hard to demonize somebody you know that you have a relationship yeah. with and have a face with it. It changes how
yeah.
you perceive people.
Yeah. And well, the other thing I talked about too was just like Nehemiah has his dream. And there's all these people that then gather around that try to like pop the balloon of his
yeah.
dream constantly.
Yeah, right.
And I think that that's something I think about with people in church is that we all probably have these little things where like, it'd be cool, I could probably do that. But usually we're shooting it down
yeah.
first to think, nope,
no,
that's not possible.
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah.
someone else can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think Nehemiah shows us kind of a way to realize that those dreams really are possible. If God is real.
Right.
If God is
yeah.
really active in our world,
mm-hmm.
then we have to change what we think is possible.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things I said was we hear these things, we say, well, be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean when we say that is, if God's not in it, that's not going to happen. It won't
right.
work. But realistic, like you're saying, is God is in this. God is active in our
right.
world. So there's a different perception of what realistic is for
mm-hmm.
us.
I love how there are three sermons on the same book, and they are all sort of different. Like, you all
yeah.
each sort of took a different route. I love that.
And we
yeah.
talked about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
That's the,
yeah.
We talked about
but it's
it.
Just, it's super cool. It's, you know, because when you read stuff, I think as sometimes as people were like, oh, well, if I don't think exactly like
right,
she
right.
did, or I didn't get this
right.
out of it, then I didn't do it right. And, like, here we have
yeah.
three pastors that did
yeah.
the exact same book.
Right.
And the sermons were all different.
I think
and it's
be,
up to them to decide who was right.
Who was...
You're all right.
So we also... Sometimes we can't deal with everything that could be dealt with
right.
in a sermon. And one thing that we... I joked before we got on live that we might not... We might want to avoid. I'm just... Apparently, I'm going to need to just talk to stuff today. The price of admission for this is... And we talk about stuff. Is there is a tension that we didn't really talk about in Nehemiah. There's a tension within the Bible, in Ezra as well. You preached on Ruth, and that's about a foreigner who, you know, is brought in, and actually, you know, there are foreigners then who are part of the genealogy of Jesus,
yep.
and so a real picture of acceptance and a care for the outsider, which is all throughout Scripture. Ezra and Nehemiah during this time is a real, it's kind of the opposite of that. I mean, the part that we didn't talk about is they get everything settled and then there's a real purification of the religion, and out of that the sort of flashpoint was foreign wives. So they basically kick out all the foreign wives, you know. So there's a critique of Solomon for having foreign
right.
wives,
and
so
with that, their children,
and their children. So it's sort
so
of
it's
like
not just adults,
right?
It's probably were young women,
families,
and young children.
Yeah. yeah. So and the justification of that was that we need to have that we're a holy people called to a holy thing, and this is what gets in the way of that. That these
right.
what the wives represented, and there is, I mean, it was women, right?
Right.
What represented was their religions were different, and so they brought that influence in, and to get rid of that influence, they got rid of the people. So that's a one great example of how when we say it's very clear in the Bible, it's like, well, which story are you reading?
Right.
Because those
yeah.
tensions
mm-hmm.
are there, and I think if we go to the Bible looking for one thing, we're often disappointed.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that it speaks to how the Bible is more
realistic of human existence, the tensions that don't get resolved in our lives. I think this is a more honest way to look at it. And then you have to wrestle with that, because I don't know exactly what to do with that, because I see, as I often do, points on both sides.
Yeah. And that's another thing is that, you know, there's some things in the Bible that are clear. There's other things that they're having a conversation about.
Yeah.
You know, and one of those conversations is, who is a child of Abraham? Who is an Israelite?
Right.
Who's a Jew?
Yeah.
And as you read it, it's not always terribly clear, because sometimes it's like, all the people that came from Egypt, were they all ethnically Jewish? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Right.
But then they kind of form together, and they marry people in the land of Canaan, who is Jewish? And there's this question throughout that they never really resolve at all.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's just kind of interesting to know that God is kind of showing more and more of his dream for this world through this particular people, but it's going to open up.
Yeah.
And
that certainly happens in Jesus.
Right.
The opening up happens big time.
Probably the most clear example of that opening up. But but I think if you look at Ruth, if it was written down around the same time as Ezra and Nehemiah, which they think maybe, it's a challenge to say, remember King David's great-grandma?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
It's like she was a Moabite.
Right.
So if King David isn't Jewish, is anybody Jewish?
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's such an interesting conversation.
Jonah, which we did a few weeks ago, was that, you know, like, you're going to go to these people who are the worst of the worst and offer God's forgiveness and the possibility of repentance. And so those tensions are in there too. I mean, I don't know. You all tell me if this is a stretch. But one tension that I feel these days is we want to say you don't have to come to church to be a Christian. God's not at work just within our walls. I mean, I absolutely believe that. But I do think there is something to having a distinctive community. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something that happens when we covenant together to be the people of God and are reminded and try not to forget and to take influences out of the way that get in the way of that identity, which, you know, is a similar thing. It's really an identity thing. We are God's people, and that means certain things, and there are influences that are negative toward that perception and then to our actions. So I think we also wrestle with those tensions.
Right.
Like, how do you be distinctive and not, but also opening, this is an opening up to the whole world.
I think maybe this has to do with something we've talked about this during the series, is that this is God's story, not my story. And so as part of this idea of getting the center off of what my particular relationship with God is like, it is, what is God doing in my world, and how can I be part of that? And that is enhanced by being part of a community, so that I become, like Megan said, you know, part of the body.
Right.
And so, you know, if you say, well, you don't have to go to church to be a Christian, well, yeah, there's you know, truth to that.
Yeah.
But it's really not about whether I'm a Christian or not.
Right.
It's about whether I'm part of God's story.
Then how it's the best way to be part of God's
God
story
has
is
always
the question.
Had a people,
yeah.
Right. He's always had a people. That's been his dream.
Yeah.
And so
that's
the question.
Good. That's really good. It's always been God's dream to have a people.
Right.
Yeah.
We started with Adam and Eve. And
we all see how I took that. But
So I think maybe that speaks to that, this idea that, you know, are we trying to figure out what's the minimum we need to be a Christian, or are we trying to find ways to be part of God's dream and his story?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're invited to.
Yeah.
Anything less than that is less than what Jesus came to give us, I think.
Well, and we miss so much by not being in the community.
Right.
Like, you know, talking about being in the church or out of the church, it's like I can't, like,
and it's
I'm
not,
very
it's not
relational.
A building. We're not talking
no.
about a building,
no.
right? We're
but
talking about the.
But it's still, you know, we have people that sort of, you know, they leave and they're doing their thing, and that's perfectly fine. But it's like, I can't love on you if I don't know you.
Yeah.
I can't love on you if I don't know that you're having a crappy time right now.
Right.
You know what I
mean?
And so, like,
to
be the church to each other, we have to sort of know and be in that community with one another.
Have a context
for
something.
You know, it's like, if I don't see you in 6 months, how am I supposed to know that you're having
a
hard time to be able to love on you, to come around you,
and
to be the church to you?
And if I come to worship for entertainment to give me a fix for the week, that's more of the opposite of, you know, of leaning into a community. Yeah.
It's like Jesus didn't call one person. He called 12
people,
then hundreds,
right.
you know.
Right.
So I would say there's a part of me that's like, Christianity is not a solo sport.
Right.
And it can't be.
It can't be a solo sport.
I would do really bad. I mean, it's not bad enough as it is. Right.
lonely.
But once you start trying to define the outer limits, that's when I think we have trouble, because it's like there's kind of this peripheral zone where we just don't know, like, we don't know about that. We know a lot that we can all agree on, but sometimes we get to this outside where we're like, well, I don't know. Is Pluto a planet?
They won't make up their mind.
It was for like,
but we know this. We know the sun at least is in the center of our little thing.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
The solar system. Agree on that.
That's right. There's, when people, you know, my kind of thought is like, why do we need church? And, you know, and I've seen the best and the worst of church in, you know, 40 years. Right. But I mean, it's sort of for me like a question: why do we need art? Why do we need beauty? Why do we need each other? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's messy.
Yeah.
But there's so much good. It's not a logical thing. And we probably on the church side of things have tried to make it a logical thing. This is why you do this, this, da 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 da. I think it's much more of an organic and also just really beautiful thing. So like our sermons, that's more art than it is, you know, persuasive speech. You know, we're creating things that we send out into the world every week. And it might be good, it might be bad, it might be ordinary, but we're creating something.
Right.
You know, and the thing that we're creating is life with God at the center. You know, so even our words and how we talk about things and when we gather is that. And it's going to be fuzzy on the boundaries on the outside. But if the core, if the center is right, and we're all looking for that center, which is Jesus, then
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful, 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 beautiful things happen. And we're so prone to tell negative stories, which is a Nehemiah thing. Like, everybody's griping and they're just complaining. And we're so prone to that one of my strong points was, like, if that's the story we're telling mostly of how everything is bad and how the church has issues and people in the church, inside the church, are maybe the worst of this, I can be drawn into that, and we all can. But if that's the story we're telling, God has another story that if we really believe is going on, we ought to be talking about more. And this is almost like a mental thing for us. Like, we get so fixated on the negative. We need to turn that stuff off so that we can hear the voice of God and where He is asking us to rebuild. Because anybody can critique from the outside. Anybody can be realistic and say it can't happen. Anybody can say how to do it better. But I don't want to be with the people who are just down on the ground. It's like, I don't know. We're just going to take the next step and then the next step and the next step. And that's,
I think that's what we're invited into.
That's what we're invited into.
It's one of my things is that God started it. He has much more invested in this story than we do. It's not up to us to perpetuate it, but we are invited to be part of it.
Yeah.
And we can't derail it.
Right.
I mean, we can miss out on our opportunity.
Exactly.
But we can't.
Right.
We can't.
Can't mess it up so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can.
I don't think we can.
We're not that powerful.
Yeah, we're not that powerful, but we have an opportunity to be a part of where everything in the cosmos is heading.
Yes.
Wow.
Right. Which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Right.
If you really just think about it for a
second. Which is the restoration of the whole creation.
Yeah. Right. Which is the new heavens and the new earth.
Right. It's justice for the poor.
Yep.
It's everything
soars
working.
Into plowshares.
Soars into plowshares. Yes. The end of violence. Yeah.
It's true righteousness.
It's everything working together rather than different parts working against each other in the in the world and communities and states and governments.
That's God's dream come true.
Learning to actually love God and be loved by God and to actually love people, not just, you know, say that we should.
Right.
Or say we got to love them, but, you know, but getting the messiness.
And this was in that book we're doing again. Jesus says,
tattoos on their heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My ways are not your ways, but they can be. So it's pretty powerful.
Yes.
He also says in that book, like, the whole idea that God created us because He thought we might enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
we talked a lot about joy last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a piece for everybody. And then it's a real thing. And one of the things, actually, I said at the end of the sermon, I just remember at 9:30, is like, there's something when you look at people who like the Israelites, the Jewish people have been through it. And then they still believe that God is at work. And there's just this resilience and tenacity and look in their eye.
Right.
And that kind of faith is so inspiring. And the people that I know that have that kind of joy, I mean, it's the real deal. It's not fake. It's not manufactured. Yeah.
You know, he quotes this poem that says, "Me and God have become like two fat people in a boat.
we keep bumping into each other and laughing.
From Tattoos on the Heart?
Yeah, he quotes it from Paul.
That's not in the Bible.
That is not in the Bible. But I still like that.
Yeah.
Say it again.
It says, so it says, we become like two big people in a boat. We keep bumping into each other and laughing. On a little boat.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
I love that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, actually, we were going to do something else, but we spent a lot of time on EMI, and that's perfectly okay, because, y'all, we are in this series, we've been in this series, Entered the Story, since January, where we have really been digging into the Bible.
In the Old Testament.
All year, we've been in the Old Testament. Now, if you're still, well, yes, now. Not this coming Sunday, because we're doing something extra fun on Sunday morning. So make sure you're here to be able to see and participate in what all is happening. But the following Sunday, which will be August the 12th, we will be launching our new series that's, I don't know what it's called.
The Heart of the Story.
The Heart of the Story. But it is in the New Testament, friends. So if you are like, please, sweet baby Jesus, like I'm struggling here, we are turning a new page. And we are going to the New Testament. Now, if you are reading the plan, we are still in the Old Testament for a little bit longer.
I think September.
September 24th, there may be a turning of the page around there. If you're not reading, that's okay. Still join us. You can maybe pick up in September and start in the New Testament. That's okay. You do you, whatever that is. But just know that we are excited about, I'm excited about being in the New Testament.
Our working title for this series is Jesus Finally.
It should be.
Because it feels that way.
Yes.
Which helps us understand Jesus,
right.
Actually.
Yeah.
Yes, and so today we've sort of been talking about Jesus in the Old Testament. And so we may hear a little bit more about that next week on Q&R, where we sort of wrap up the Old Testament and are sort of getting excited and preparing you for this new series, where we will be spending quite a bit of time in the book of John, I believe.
10 weeks.
Well, I wasn't going to tell people that.
That sounds like a bit much.
I really wasn't going to go there. I was going to let that be a surprise. Every Sunday, you're like, oh, we're in John again today.
But it's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus,
so that makes it great. But anyway, guys, we are so glad that you joined us today. We're glad to have Cam here with us to share with us and bring all of his awesome Duke knowledge, but we're not going to harp on your school right now, or your school right now, whatever I said. But anyway, we hope you have a great week. You can email us your questions, and we will see you right here next Wednesday for the next session of Q&R.